Hello and welcome to the Fast Fill. Fast Fill is a podcast series sponsored by Natural Gas Vehicles for America, the national organization dedicated to the development of a growing, profitable, and sustainable marketplace for vehicles powered by natural gas and biomethane, and for promoting the use of more natural gas in transportation. I'm your host, Dan Gage, president of NGV America, and joining me today is Rob Adams from Marathon Technical Services and longtime NGV America general counsel and director of regulatory affairs, Jeffrey Clark. Hey, welcome, Rob and Jeff. Thanks for joining me.
Hey, Dan. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, and we thought it would be a little timely. We're here at the Olympics, and we're going to talk a little bit about the Atlanta Olympics and the clean transit efforts. But before we do that, Rob, you've been in this industry for some time. So share your background with our listeners just a little bit, if you would.
Sure, Dan. I got into the industry in 1984. I first started working. I was right out of school at the time, out of engineering school, and I started working for a large gas utility in Ontario, Canada. And in fact, I was their first CNG-specific hire. They had been doing some CNG and just using their fleet folks to sort of take care of the projects, and I was the first person they hired strictly for CNG. But I actually didn't stay there very long. I left after about 18 months, and I co-founded a CNG equipment manufacturer. That company sort of took off. It was good timing for the market. We very quickly got out into the U.S. market, not just the Canadian market, and grew the company to about the second or third largest U.S. supplier by sales. Then I sold the company and left in 95, and I started Marathon Technical Services, which is the company that I now represent. And so I've owned and operated Marathon since 95, and we focus on providing consulting services. We're not contractors, we're not equipment suppliers, just consulting for the CNG infrastructure market, focused on CNG stations and garage modifications, as well as financial project analysis.
So, Rob, I know I've talked to a lot of folks in the industry, and your name comes up, and you are the NGV whisperer. So, what are some of the trends that you're seeing right now in the industry, U.S. and Canada, here in North America? I mean, is there renewed interest? What sort of applications? What are you busy with?
So I have to say, you know, this is going to be through my lens, and I'm focused on sort of medium to large sized projects. So a lot of my work is transit related, and frankly has been since the mid to late 80s. Started into the transit market in that time frame, and it has continued to evolve and grow maybe not at the pace it once did, but there are still a number of transit projects coming along and renewed commitment by people who've been in it for a long time, and maybe it's time to rebuild their station 20 years later.
Good for you.
And then also the refuse business, collection trucks primarily. So we're doing a lot of work in that area, and most of our projects there are focused on municipal fleets. There are, of course, private fleets who are also big into this, but we're not really involved in that part of the market. So a lot of our work is municipal, government, and transit.
So let's talk today about the 1996 Summer Olympic Games. They were held in Atlanta, Georgia. For those of us that can remember that far back, 25 years ago, right? 17-day event. So it was right about the same time frame as when the Olympics were held this year. Back then it was July 19th through August 4th. And then just like the Tokyo Games, the Paralympic Games are held right after. I guess about 10,000 athletes. They expected or host about 2 million or so spectators, dignitaries. So Atlanta was a pretty busy spot 25 years ago. And there was a push at the time to ensure that the transit needs that they had to meet reflected the most advanced clean air technology of the time. And Jeff, you were working at the time for American Gas Association, AGA. So you were in this space at the same time. So how did this all come about, Rob?
I got involved in 1995, but my understanding was it started really in about 92. With the American Gas Association, kind of led by Atlanta Gaslight, they saw an opportunity to showcase NGVs on a world stage at the Centennial Olympic Games. So they approached ACOG. We'll talk about them in a minute, but they approached ACOG and secured a sponsorship. And just to add one more metric to what you were saying there in terms of size and scale, it was described, it was the largest games in history to that point, and it was described as the equivalent of two Super Bowl games per day for 17 days consecutively. And that's a quote you'll see if you look through some of the older literature and articles on this.
Yeah.
So AGA did provide both vehicles and the fuel as part of its sponsorship contribution. And it was kind of a unique situation because prior to that, I think all sponsorships were company related.
Right.
And so you think of Coca-Cola and Nike or those types of companies. Kind of our parallel sponsors were General Motors, BMW, and Nissan. And those were all fleet sponsors as well, providing a range of their vehicles along with our CNG vehicles.
And if you think back to the Olympics, really the 96 games were really when the branding and marketing, right, really sort of blossomed. So this was an opportunity to take a technology that was, again, growing in interest here in the U.S. and really give it a world spotlight. Jeff, you sent a couple articles around this morning that we were talking about hydrogen in Tokyo, and the Tokyo Games intended to do the same thing for hydrogen fuel buses, yeah?
Yeah, so, you know, as you're talking about, the gas industry really viewed the 96 Olympics as an opportunity to showcase the many benefits of natural gas, certainly in transportation in particular. And so with the latest Olympics, yeah, there was a lot of buzz and a lot of excitement around trying to showcase hydrogen and fuel cell vehicles in Japan. And there were some really aggressive plans. The prime minister at the time in 2020 said that they were going to have 100 fuel cell buses operating on hydrogen, and the entire Olympic Village was going to be powered by hydrogen. So somewhat similar to what was done by the gas industry in 96, they tried to do again with hydrogen.
Well, and Rob met that challenge. So let's get into that too, Rob. So as a newbie to the industry, I would hear bits and pieces here, you know, the last 4 years about the Clean Air Team. What was the Clean Air Team? Who was it? Sounds like a Marvel Comics effort.
Yeah, there were no capes involved here. it was a large undertaking. It was really too large for a single company. You know, Atlanta Gaslight, they were right there, but it was too big an undertaking for them to do solely. So, and they always realized that it would be necessary to bring the gas industry at large into it. And they pooled the best companies and individuals. And Dennis Smith, who is well known in our industry, he was the president of the Clean Air Team, and he liked to refer to this as the NGV Dream Team. But in fact, it was the Clean Air Team, or CAT. And it was led by Dennis and Atlanta Gaslight. Atlanta Gaslight is now part of Southern Company, and I believe they're an NGVA member.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Who were some of the other key players in that?
So it was a coalition of gas utilities, pipeline companies, equipment suppliers, and of course, the companies were supplying personnel as well. We also had some retirees from the gas industry. We had community college staff, and there were just a wide variety of industry stakeholders.
And you got pulled in through as a contractor, correct? Through the Gas Research Institute, which is now GTI?
Correct. They were also part of this effort and were a member of the AGA Clean Air Team.
Right.
And so they were trying to sort of find a good way to contribute. And, you know, they are a research-based entity. So this was more of a deployment kind of situation than it was a research situation. So they contracted with my company to provide project management and logistical support. And we basically came in early. I started in this in late 1995, and our effort spanned late 95 right through till September, October of 96, some wrap up after the games. And we did collect some data at the time. So there was a research component to it, but this was primarily, you know, showcasing that CNGs work, and they work in a lot of different applications and in tough conditions, because the Olympics were, they were a workout in these vehicles, high temperatures, high duty cycles. So
humidity, right?
Humidity. Yes. One thing that we learned, it rains every day at 2 o'clock in Atlanta and it's hot before and it's hot after.
Yeah. So your customer then was, you mentioned ACOG, the Atlanta Committee for the Olympic Games. They were in essence the customer. You're also sort of a sponsor, but you had to bring in MARTA, right? Metropolitan Atlanta Rapid Transit Authority, the local gas utility, Atlanta Gaslight was involved, right? And you mentioned this. It was a huge effort between utilities, equipment suppliers. And then you also mentioned, I think, or told me in a prior conversation, that community college staff and other stakeholders were involved because there was a huge training component of this, right? I mean, these buses were driven by licensed drivers that ACOG hired for the Olympic Games, but many of them didn't have experience, right, in natural gas buses. So, you know, you had to basically train them on fueling and any other specifics, right?
We did. And so, I mean, we had quite a wide variety. I mean, just about anything you can imagine. Well, let me sort of back up a little bit. The American Gas Association took care of all the marketing related effort. Okay. And you know, sort of the giveaways and the merchandising and so on. They took care of all of that. And we basically did all the boots on the ground stuff. Everything that had to happen related to training and you know, equipment, managing of the equipment, managing of the people, it all sort of fell to the clean air team to do all of that. And so we did provide training for the drivers. The drivers for the transit buses were supplied by ACOG. It was hard to find drivers at this time. And so they were hiring school bus drivers, to drive transit buses. And there's a big difference between driving a school bus and a transit bus. A lot of different technology involved in that. We did all the fueling and servicing of the vehicles, though. So in terms of the buses, we did all of the fueling and servicing of the buses.
Okay.
And we were very fortunate because MARTA, the Metropolitan Atlanta Rapid Transit Authority, had just completed their Perry Boulevard facility in preparation for the games. And so this facility was a high-speed, full-scale transit fueling operation. And we shared that with MARTA. We basically, they gave us a block of time. We fueled our buses in that block of time. And then they fueled their buses outside of that block of time. And so that gave us the ability to fast fill a fleet of 125 buses, I think it was.
Did these transit buses that worked all day, did you just have to refuel them once a day?
Yes. Yeah. Wow. These buses are designed for 400 mile range.
Right.
And so like any transit bus, the duty cycle on a transit bus can be sort of early morning rollout right to midnight roll in. Right. So these were just buses that came from around the country. And so, yes, they typically would have something in the 300 to 400 mile range.
Yeah, I had to get my dig in there about battery electric, right? So tell us then, you just mentioned about the number of buses. I mean, there were about 2,000 buses total. You were just speaking to the CNG transit buses component, but I believe you had a mix of everything, some transit buses, school buses, or even some LNG, maybe motor coaches involved too?
Correct. Yes. So in terms of conventional 40-foot transit buses, and I want to stipulate this is on top of anything MARTA had, because MARTA buses were really, they were doing their normal thing. They had people to move around the city running their normal routes. So they weren't really part of this effort. They were just doing their job, albeit at a much higher level than normal ridership. But in terms of the clean air team, we had about 125 buses, I think it was 40-foot buses. They came from around the U.S. The biggest donation of buses came from LAMTA, and they gave us 50 brand new buses right out of the factory. So that was very welcome and very well appreciated by ACOG and the ridership as well. So beyond that, we did have those four LNG buses. To be quite honest, at the time, we had thought we were going to have a lot more than that, maybe as many as 50 LNG buses. Mm. But there was some political and I guess, logistical issues in getting those buses. And so that those buses, the deal to get them kind of fell apart. But we were fortunate because we did get buses from Idaho National Lab. They were coaches, you know, high floor LNG coaches, beautiful buses, really. And they were actually used, I think, exclusively by NBC, who was the media sponsor. And so this was beautiful from our standpoint because, you know, we had the media riding LNG buses.
And nice.
And they were a great product. And yeah, they were well appreciated. So, but then on top of that, we had 50 school buses. Full disclosure, 35 of those were clean diesel. Clean diesel was kind of a new thing at that time.
Uh-huh.
And only 15 of them were CNG. But they were brand new and they were donated by the California Energy Commission. They came right out of the factory at Bluebird. Bluebird's in Georgia, so that was relatively local. These had military drivers. Again, we did not supply the drivers for the buses. These were military drivers. They were somewhat rough on these buses. And at the end of the games, 47 of the 50 had to have some amount of body work done to get them back to new conditions so they could go and be on their way to California. So,
well, I know in Tokyo, they were talking some stuff that I read. They were hoping to have 100 hydrogen buses. They only ended up with a few. And they were hoping to have 500 light duty vehicles. And of course, Toyota was a primary sponsor. Toyota invests heavily in hydrogen. So I suspect they meant that to some degree. What about in Atlanta? Did you have light duty CNG vehicles involved in this? And was that part of your effort too, or how did that all come together?
We did, yes. And I don't have the exact numbers on that. I think it was around 200, and they were a real combination. We had everything from sedans to vans to cutaway van buses to pickup trucks. And these vehicles were used both by the Clean Air team and by ACOG staff. And then there were about 50 F-250 pickups that were used to pull open air trams around as well. And that 50 of the 200. So so there's a fifth wheel tram. So we had to take these trucks. They were brand new pickups. We had to take them and get them upfitted with the fifth wheel equipment, trailer packages, and so on. They saw quite a wide variety of duty and performed really well by all counts.
And you mentioned the Super Bowl metric, and I think listeners have to recognize just the enormous logistical situation that you had or challenge you had on your hands. 11 million tickets were sold. The Metropolitan Atlanta Regional Transit Authority, they successfully transport about 475,000 people on a given weekday, that's their daily ridership. And they had to transport more than 800,000 daily during the games as part of this. So you're talking about almost, you know, just shy of a million people a day on transit. That's a huge undertaking. What was the routing focus for natural gas buses? You mentioned, you know, the MARTA buses still had to run their regular routes. And of course, they did have a smaller rail system there. It's since been expanded. But what were you more of a connector? Were you inside the Olympic Ring or was it all over metropolitan Atlanta?
It was really, think of MARTA as, again, they were just running kind of enhanced regular service because they had normal routes that they needed to provide. I'm sure they had some Olympic specific routes to drop people off in the village and things like that. But we weren't really part of transporting just the general public. So we were transporting spectators, staff, athletes, this sort of thing, depending on the vehicle type and the press I mentioned with the LNG buses. So we also did not design the routes. We didn't design the routes. We didn't provide the drivers. But, of course, we did want to see maximum exposure to these vehicles. And we were fortunate, really, in the way they were deployed because of the people we were transporting. They were riding these buses and, And frankly, the natural gas buses were some of the newest buses that were in this, the total bus fleet. You mentioned 2,000 buses, but
right.
ours were among the newest in that fleet. And so they really showed off well. People really liked riding on those, and they just happened to be natural gas too. So, but they showed off well, they performed well. So we did have good exposure inside the Olympic ring. Again, the routes were something that were kind of specific to the type of ridership for a given vehicle.
Sure. How were all your expenses covered? I mean, there had to have been just a lot of in-kind work. Yes.
Oh, yes. Actually, I wanted to add something to the last one. So there were some particularly high profile vehicles there. And for example, we had a Dodge pickup as the pace vehicle for the marathon. And along with that pickup, we had a couple of GM medium duty trucks with cameras mounted on it, parallel yeah. marathon. So again, these are, that the marathon's kind of the culminating event for the Olympics. And so we were right there in the middle of that. And then in addition to that, we were able to leverage the fact that MARTA did have, 80 or so CNG buses running around on the street that were also high visibility because they were MARTA's newest buses. So they wanted to put them out there and maximize the visibility. And MARTA had control over which routes those buses would be used on. So,
yeah.
So yes, we sorry to go back to the.
No, some certainly high profile.
Yeah.
How did all get paid for?
How did it get paid for? Well, so the personnel, the vehicles, the other equipment, they were all in kind, on loan, basically from various industry stakeholders who mentioned before, utilities, pipelines, equipment suppliers, and so on. CAT itself had no payroll. I mean, there was really no CAT entity that was paying us. We were all paid by someone else, for the time or volunteer, strictly volunteer. As I mentioned, there were some retirees that were there just because they wanted to be part of it. But we were also able to, apart from AGA's direct effort, the Clean Air team was also able to secure some cash donations. If we had stakeholders that really weren't able to donate something that could be used, they were willing to donate cash in some cases. So that helped. The American Gas Association, they had pledged to provide the natural gas. And I'm frankly not sure exactly how that was paid for. So mm-hmm. I have to leave that. But I do know that they recouped some of the money from members. And also, there was quite a lot of merchandise that was sold. And that's part of the whole Olympic, how do these people monetize their contribution? Well, that's one way that they're able to do it. So
right. Right. So what were your big five accomplishments or four or five accomplishments? How did things work out for the effort and your takeaways?
Well, personally, I have to say it's one of the highlights of my career. So, I was very happy to be involved then, and I'm very happy now that I was involved. But, we met our goal of fueling and maintenance of these vehicles. We never missed a bus rollout. And we got very high marks from ACOG, which, by the way, wasn't easy to do because they were hard masters to work for, I will say.
Well, and I can remember their CEO, Billy Payne. He was sort of a colorful personality, right? He's a successful businessman in the region, but a colorful guy. So, yeah, I remember that.
They were never shy to ask for just one more thing. and thankfully we were able to accommodate their wishes. And so I think we ended up in good shape in that respect. Most of the vehicle problems were not CNG related. We had tires and batteries and stuff like that that were causing
poor drivers.
Yeah, problems because of drivers. By the way, those insurance claims were paid for by ACOG's insurance sponsors. So
there you go.
The Clean Air team didn't have to actually pay for that. I'd say the thing that sort of validated our approach, the first week of operations were really hectic. As everybody kind of had to settle into what the expectations would be, how we were going to do things. So it was a pretty hectic first week. And then after that, things really kind of settled down. And it wasn't that it was quiet, but it was just like running pretty smoothly. And we're all kind of looking at each other, just waiting to see, okay, when's the next shoe going to drop and what's it going to be? But, you know, it never did. And yeah. So things worked out really well. And by the way, we didn't lose any of our vehicles.
Nothing went missing.
After the fact, ACOG ended up having to comb Hartsfield Airport long-term parking lots to find vehicles from other sponsors. You know, their volunteers had driven these vehicles and couldn't get a ride to the airport, so they drove their ACOG vehicle.
Just left it. Yeah, there you go.
So we didn't have any of that.
Jeff, let's look at the Olympics this year. And this, you know, as we talked about, or I mentioned earlier, you know, this was Japan's effort to try to do something similar related to hydrogen. How did that all work out?
Yeah, well, you know, we've been watching and trying to pick up on some of this, yeah. Because the cameras are focused on the athletes, right? They're not following the buses around. So, but what we've heard in the last couple of days is that it sounds like the plan to go with the fuel cell buses fell through.
Yeah.
And that they were relying on diesel buses to transport the athletes around. And the Olympic Village, they were able to fuel one of the buildings in the Olympic Village on hydrogen. Of course, the Olympic Cauldron, they were able to light with hydrogen. And I think the whole world saw that. And, you know, I know, Dan, you got to let me get my little plug in here. My fun fact is that when hydrogen burns, you really can't see anything. So they had to add sodium carbonate solution to the hydrogen so that you actually see that orange yellowish flame. So,
And I read somewhere, Jeff, too, that during the relay, they couldn't use hydrogen, of course. They could in parts, right? It fixed, you know, spots, but the torch was actually propane. So,
yeah, not surprising. I mean, you know, I think the lesson learned is that, you know, sometimes even with the best plans, things don't work out. And I think that's a real testament to the accomplishment in 1996 that it was a great plan. And we're fortunate it worked out well. And I was writing down some notes as Rob was talking about, you know, what the right mix of things you need are. And it sounds like you have to have insurance because you're going to beat up these buses. You got to have FTA approval because you can't just move buses all across the country that are paid for by the federal government. So you got to get the FTA to pay for it or approve it. You got to have lots of volunteers. You got to have great sponsors. And lastly, I think you guys will agree with me. You have to have a winning technology. And I think natural gas is and was a winning technology. And that was probably a big part of the success, as well as all the volunteers.
Yeah.
That's one thing. You know, natural gas is kind of boring because it just works.
It's a workhorse, right? It's a workhorse and not necessarily just the show horse. I read somewhere that Toyota was the Toyota manufactured the buses in the Tokyo Games as well, and that their fuel cell buses cost an estimated $900,000 in U.S. dollars for a 6-year lease. And I just thought that was a really interesting amount. They obviously hydrogen, even a lot of the hydrogen vehicles are leased today, and not sold. But I thought $900,000 just for 6 years. And Jeff, you mentioned FTA. I mean, if you're using FTA funds, you're talking about a 12-year life cycle, right?
Yeah, that is the requirement. And I wonder if the 6-year life has something to do with the current life of the, I imagine they're storing compressed hydrogen on board and those cylinders may have a 6-year life. I know I've seen that in the past with some of the hydrogen cylinders.
Yeah. Interesting. Anything else to share on this or last thoughts, guys?
Well, I think, I realize it's been 25 years and we certainly did this at the time, but I'd just like to again thank all of the people, especially, not just the companies, but the people who came and made this work, because there were a lot of 80 and 100 hour weeks put in by a lot of people. And we had a really great bunch of, like I said before, I think there was between 100 and 200, I don't have the exact number, but people who came and staffed this volunteered by their companies or volunteered individually. And they're the ones, they're the backbone of this whole effort. They're the ones that made it happen.
Yeah. And you mentioned a couple names. I know in reports that I read, Joe Gordon at Southern Company, Chuck Moon. There was a gentleman named Mike Brown who worked at the National Lab who helped on training. Linda Mean Smith, obviously Dennis Smith. And Dennis just retired, as we know, from DOE. So we wish them well. But it was, sounds like it was a certainly an NGV dream team, as Dennis liked to say, that's for sure. And so we're moving onward and upward, right? We'll keep at it. Jeff, we have some interesting data coming that we've been reviewing from some of these transit reports that are in. Do you want to tee that up just a little bit about what we're putting together from the close up of the NREL report at Foothill?
Yeah, we put out a report last year on natural gas transit buses and really showed how they're performing extremely well in comparison to electric buses. Mm-hmm. And we've got some new data coming out from reports that have been tracking those buses. And we continue to see the natural gas buses doing very well, doing what they're supposed to do, which is meet pullout every day, providing low operating costs relative to other technologies. And they're really performing well. And just to kind of go back to the Olympics, you know, it showcased what natural gas can do. Where we are today is we have about 12,000 natural gas transit buses in operation in the U.S. So in almost every city in the U.S., we have natural gas buses that are working well, lowering emissions, saving money. And as you know, using a lot more renewable natural gas, which is a whole other topic for a podcast that we could do.
Yeah.
A lot of good updates there.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Rob and Jeff. I appreciate you guys both being with us. That was an interesting walk down memory lane and stuff I've heard an awful lot about in the last 4 years, as I said, bits and pieces. But I appreciate it, Rob, for putting it all and connecting all the dots. It was interesting.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
Yeah. And thanks to you, our listeners, for tuning in. Rob's firm, Marathon Technical Services, provides a unique combination of technical and financial analysis services dedicated to the natural gas vehicle fuel infrastructure market. And he works across North America and beyond. You can find out more about Rob and his legendary firm at marathontech.ca. Marathontech.ca. For more information on NGV America, visit our website at ngvamerica.org, and there you can always sign up for our weekly newsletter. Share comments with us on today's podcast via email at info@ngvamerica.org, and be sure to follow us on all your favorite social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. On behalf of Rob Adams, Jeff Clark, and the entire NGV America team, I'm Dan Gage. Thanks again for joining us. You just experienced the Fast Fill. Until next time.